Thank you for listening to the Florida Community of Mindfulness's Dharma Talks. I'm Angela Parrish, Executive Director for FCM, and we're very happy to make these talks from our teacher, Fred Epsteiner, available to you. If you find this talk of benefit, please consider making a donation to support us so that we can continue to offer these recordings freely. You'll find a donation button on the talk section of our website, floridamindfulness.org. May you be happy and free from suffering.
So, good morning, everyone, and thank you for coming out on this beautiful morning. Before I begin with the formal teachings, I just want to make sure that there are no questions that anybody has about the practices that we've already done this morning. Sitting, the walking, the mindfulness, just how to do the practice, which is really most essential. So if anybody is not clear, please feel comfortable asking a question. Good. So everybody knows how to practice. It's good. So what I wanted to talk about this morning is something really very basic, something that we all may think we know, but my experience over all these years is that in truth we really think we know it, but we don't know it. So there's a meditation text that in one or several of our intensives that are going on now, people are using to guide their practice. It's called the text is called The Wheel of Analysis and Meditation That Thoroughly Purifies Mental Activity. It's a great text by a great teacher of the last century. In Tibet, Mipam Rinpoche. Thank you. And this is just some lines that are before the actual practice text begins on how to meditate. The measure of progress, and the third section is the significance of the practice. But he introduces it with these words. Whatever problems there are in the world are created by the afflictions in our own minds. A mistaken attitude is the cause for the kleshas. Yet the pattern of our thoughts can be refined. And then the practice text itself is about how to go about that process. But I think this is incredibly important because why is that so important? Because I think many people in our country who are attracted to Buddhism or mindfulness or meditation think that it's just by doing that that therefore all their suffering. Kleshas are afflictions, the emotional afflictions, that they will be remediated through the practice of meditation. And certainly there are many positive things to be said about the practice of meditation, and certainly it's at the heart of the Buddhist tradition of awakening, enlightenment. And yet, this thing that he says, a mistaken attitude is the cause for our kleshas or our suffering, and the pattern of thoughts can be refined. So many of us look to meditation, mindfulness, as a way of getting around that. Rather than doing the work of refining our thoughts, refining our attitudes, which is sort of, you know, kind of the mental constructs that we show up with in life and process life, we want to kind of skip around that one, because many of us, because that's too close, you see. And many of us want to skip around that and take enough teachings, enough the meditation practices, just to kind of remediate things a little bit in our life. ...2600 years since the time of the Buddha, and somehow the teaching has been transmitted from generation to generation without amplification. But somehow, in our current world, amplification is a necessity. I don't know how they did it in the old days, right? Maybe we live in fallen times. So most of us, I think, the truth is, we approach a spiritual life, we approach, in this case, the Dharma, in terms of Buddhism, essentially to get enough of it, to bring enough of it into our already existing way of looking at life and who we are and what life's about. We want to bring enough in that's kind of comfortable for us and kind of allows us, again, to somewhat remediate our difficulties, our suffering, but we really don't want to let it all the way in. You see, we don't want to let it all the way in, because that might make us uncomfortable. That may make us have to really look at and challenge the whole way, you know, we're looking at life and living life and perceiving life, what he's calling our attitudes, our mistaken attitude, and the pattern of our thoughts. And we may be surprised to find out that within, let's say, in the tradition I know, the Buddhist tradition, that the transformation of the way we think, the way we perceive, actually traditionally comes before one meditates, right? See, in America, we like to jump right into meditation. Why? Because we're Americans, you know, we're pretty good. We're pretty sharp. We kind of get things, you see, and we're not like the rest of those people in the world who had to kind of learn all these things, you know, which again is part of our problem. And also, I think, in our education system, we are accumulators of information, you see. We have gone through our schooling, and it's really, we are always just learning so we can pass the next test, you see. We really don't assimilate. We really don't chew on. We really don't see the implications of what we're learning. And so many of us have kind of because we've gone through this educational system where we really haven't really learned to think about what we're reading in any deep inherent sense. That's why most of us, we can look back on our 12 or 16 or 20 or how many years of education we have and really not remember most of it. Right? Because we've only learned it just to kind of, you know, again, learn the subject matter of whatever it was so we can, you know, pass the test or get through the course or whatever. But the idea of really chewing on, integrating, is not the way we learn. We're used to learning how to turn pages. Right? We turn pages. right? And maybe we underline. But it's all short term, you see. So we all have kind of a short term memory problems. We don't know how to turn things into long term. And going back to the time of the Buddha said, hear the teachings, reflect on the teachings, then practice the teachings. But I think what we do is we hear the teachings and then we practice the teachings, thinking that we understand them, which is a grave mistake. Because the Buddha said, chew on the teachings, reflect, contemplate. Do they make sense to you? Do you understand them? Do you see the implications and the meaning for your life and the life of others? You know, only after you have come up with a yes, 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 then practice. Right? So he really wanted to slow us down. And, you know, we are a culture where we are very fast. We're in a hurry, aren't we? Right? Like we just kind of skim things and get to the end. Right? Why read the whole book when you can just read the end, right? You see, we want, you know, everything is short, everything is pre-digested these days, isn't it? So we've really, many of us have lost the ability for really, again, really thinking through on our own. So we can come up with our own conclusion, right? I mean, this is the problem, again, these days in America, most people are getting, let's say, their Dharma, their Buddhism, through modern people who have already digested it, and they're giving us kind of their digestive materials. We like that. We don't want to have to read that traditional stuff, do we? It's kind of boring. Or wordy or something, you see. But we don't understand that when we're getting it from somebody else, we're getting somebody else's interpretation, conclusion of it. That's why traditionally we've been asked to kind of really contemplate the basics of our tradition. So whatever problems there are in the world are created by the afflictions in our own minds. Do we believe that? Why don't we stop there? Do we believe that? Why, you know, the problems of the world, what are they created by? They're created by people, right? I'm leaving off the poor animals and the plants for now. But the problems of the world are created by human beings. Well, what is a human being? They're a body and their mind. Are their bodies creating the problems? No. Their bodies are servants of the mind. So what's creating the problems of the world? All the problems of the world are created by human beings' minds. Do you agree with that? What's creating all the problems in our own life? Our minds. The way we perceive things. The way we feel about things. Where is that all coming from? From our minds. So, if one understands that the root of the problems of the world are the problems in human beings' minds, then therefore the transformation of the world has to have something to do with what? Transformation of human beings' minds. Oh. Well, that's a very different way of looking at the problems of the world than sort of what is usually accepted, which is what? Change it from the outside. Change policy, page, you know. Which again, I'm not saying that that's not somewhat beneficial, but there's no long-lasting solution in that. So we have to change whatever problems there are in the world are created by the afflictions in our mind. A mistaken attitude is the cause for these defilements, yet the patterns of thought can be refined. Right? We can change the way we view things think about things, perceive things. Oh, that's what I need to be doing. And further in this text, he says, significant remediation of the afflictions of our suffering can occur simply by having a clear view of what's going on in this world, what's going on in reality, before one even crosses one's legs, before one even learns about mindfulness and single point of concentration and insight, which is the path of awakening. But that path of awakening was traditionally trod by not the many, but the few. But that doesn't mean prior to that, that significant remediation in the suffering of all of us, of all human beings, can occur just by refining the way we perceive the world, ourselves and others. And by skipping over that, we end up in this situation which many people who practice a spiritual path, in this case the Dharma, they because they have read for years, because they've meditated for years, they are often frustrated or disappointed that the inherent kind of difficulty that they have always struggled with within themselves, while it may be softened, still is very existent within their own minds and in their relations with others and the world. And so that's often a sense of there's something wrong with me, or, you know, or something wrong with the practice. But again, it's often simply a matter that we have skipped over this essential middle point. We've been turning the pages of our Dharma books. Right, we've turned our Dharma into conversations where we can go the four, oh, I know the four of this and the six of this and the eight of that, you see. But we really don't get the implications or significance of them. So what Mipham Rinpoche is suggesting in this wheel of analysis and meditation that thoroughly purifies mental activity is the way to go about that. Are there any questions so far in terms of what's been said before we kind of look into what this is about? I mean, so if anybody is, anything that's been said so far doesn't sit well with you or you don't see it that way. Yes.
I can understand how wars are created by people in their mind. What about diseases? Thousands of people die. How does the mind create that?
Whatever problems there are in the world are created by the afflictions in our mind. It didn't say all the suffering of the world. There's lots of suffering in the world that is just part of being in the world, right? The suffering, I mean, having a body means one suffers illness and disease. Right? Being in the world means we're suffered to all the variations of possibilities of good weather and bad weather, beautiful days and hurricanes and tornadoes and, you know, so yeah, and floods and yeah, it's not right. So so he's not talking about that. He's talking about the afflictions that go on among beings. That's what we're really concerned with, you know. whether it's the big stuff, it's just the little stuff that goes on an everyday level between human beings, right? You know, what creates this affliction? That's what he's talking about. Good. Any other questions? Yes.
Do you think there's any benefit that comes with that, even if that's kind of widely disseminated, even if that makes sense at all?
The question is, is there benefit from people just incorporating some meditation and mindfulness in their life? Yeah. Right? There's a therapeutic benefit. Is there any benefit from people consuming less sugar? Yeah, there's a benefit. You're a little healthier, eating less junk food. You're a little healthier. You know what I mean? There's lots of benefits from, these kinds of measures. But, what he's talking about or talking to is an audience of people who say, in this case, I want to be free of suffering. I want to be free of all my self-created suffering. I want to be free of the kleshas, anger and doubt and fear and despair. I want to be free of all those. You see? I want to be able to show up in the world open-hearted, wise, clear-sighted, clear-minded. That's why I want to show up all the time. Oh, see, he's talking to those people. So each of us could decide, am I one of those people? Right? Am I one of those people who just want to be a little healthier? Or am I one of those people who want to be healthy? Really healthy. Right? And that's a personal choice. And what we don't realize that, just coping better, which is in Western psychology sort of the gold standard, coping better. Do I just want to cope better with life? Or do I really want to have a happy, meaningful life? Do I really want to have a mind that is the repository of mostly wholesome thoughts and wholesome emotions? That feels good most of the time, right? Or do I really believe that just just having my afflictive emotions less strong, less intense, shorter duration is all I can accomplish in this lifetime, right? So it's So this process that we're being exposed to is this idea that somehow this mind can be refined and purified. And that the impurities are misperceptions about life, our attitudes about life, which cause us to have negative emotional consistent moments in our life, which then spill over into our speech, the things we do physically, our relationships, and how we show up in the world. But here the essential focus is on the mind. Does that answer your question? Yeah. So, now I'm going to be talking about now things that all of you know, or most of you know, basic Dharma. Dharma 101. Okay? And many of us would go, you may hear me go, but I know that, Fred. Come on, I'm here for deeper stuff. But I want to circle back to what Meepom said. You just get this and you will have significant remediation in all your suffering just by this. And then if you add in meditation, well, then you really have a capacity of living it. Okay. So what are these mistaken attitudes? Right? Or let's look at, you know, what are these fundamental teachings? And it's about what's called view. In basic Buddhism, our view is essential. Do we have a correct view or an incorrect view? Right? Of what's going on in reality. Reality life. So this is not theological, this is not theoretical, this is just very practical. What's going on in this life? Do I see clearly? Do I see the forest or do I just see the individual trees? Do I see the big picture of what's going on in this life? Okay, so one of the things, we all know this, one of the things that's going on in this life is impermanence. Impermanence means what? Everybody knows this. What? Well, everything's changing. Everything's changing. Right? Dan said he's going to die. We're going to die. Yeah, that's just change. That's the nature of this world. It's the nature of everything. It's the nature of reality. Nothing is permanent, nothing is solid, nothing is stable. Everything is just changing. Moment, our thoughts, our minds, changing, changing, changing. Thoughts, feelings, perceptions, changing, 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 right? Our bodies constantly changing, born, growing, dying. Everybody's participating in this. Worlds are participating in this. Moments are, you know, every moment, as soon as it happens, disappears, right? If you think about it, since you woke up this morning, you have had many moments, right? Each of us has had many moments. Where are they all? Gone. Why are they gone? Because that's the nature of reality. Okay? So, you know, if you really understand impermanence, in the face of it, you're not scared. You're not angry. You're not disappointed. You understand, this is the nature of reality. Everything changes. Everybody dies. Everybody gets sick. Everybody ages. Everything changes. People are changing all the time. Right? Now we're always disappointed, aren't we? Because why? What? Because they're changing. Hold on. I thought you said this to me a week ago. Right? You know, it's like, oh, you know, what's going on here? I mean, we even get disappointed in ourselves because just 10 minutes ago, we just made a commitment or an aspiration how we were going to show up today. And what happens? Gone. Everything's changing. Okay, we could talk a lot about this, but these are one of these key teachings about reality. Now, another key teaching, nothing solid. Nothing is solid. Everything is made of parts. And parts, and parts, and parts, and subparts, and, right? Nothing. So things appear a certain way, but that's not really how things are. Things are just made up of parts. Everything is composite. There's nothing solid. Everything is just parts. Flowers are made up of petals and stems, and they're subject to impermanence. So they appear, and then they wilt and die. This is just made of parts. This is just made of parts. This is just made of parts. My mind is just made of parts. I look for my mind. I can't find a mind. I can find thoughts that are constantly coming and going, feelings that are constantly coming and going, memories, perceptions. But I can't find anything solid. Right? If you ever find something solid called your mind, please call me. Because you're the first person to ever find a thing called a mind. But we can find lots of things going on, lots of parts of a body, lots of parts of everything. Oh, things are just made up of parts, everything. things are impermanent, cause and effect. Third big one. Everybody know cause and effect? Yes. Everybody know karma? Yes. We know about this stuff. What does it mean to really understand that everything in this impermanent world made of parts is just arising and passing simply because of causes and conditions? In other words, it's not personal. We want to make everything personal, don't we? We want to see people and situations as solid, permanent things, and we want to hold them to blame, rather than seeing it's just causes and conditions. Everyone, each of us here, we are showing up today only because of the causes and conditions that have sustained us and created us right up to this moment. That's all we are. Myriad causes and conditions. That's all we are. Causes and conditions. That's all the world is, causes and conditions. It's true at the smallest level, and it's true at the biggest level. Cause and effect. Impermanence. Now, there's another one that we don't like. It's called the unsatisfactoriness of this world. The fundamental unsatisfactoriness. This one really, we don't want to accept this one, do we? Because we've been raised to believe what? That life is about what? Yeah, and finding what? Pleasure in this world, pleasant events in this world. That's what life's about, right? And a good life is what? Having one pleasant event after the other. Right? One pleasurable event after the other, and doing our best to keep all the unpleasant events out. Isn't that true? Oh, that's what life's about. Now, in Buddhism, that's called a deluded life. Why is that true? Why is that true? It's true for a number of reasons. One is, life is made up of pleasant and unpleasant events. And as long as you want only pleasant events, beautiful days, good life, everything good happening, you will always be what? Disappointed by the opposite, frustrated by the opposite, hurt by the opposite, angered by the opposite, sad by the opposite. Right? So that understanding that is important. But the other real deeper reason why fundamentally, all the activities of this world are unsatisfactory, or endlessly will promote fundamentally dissatisfaction within us, is because of the prior. Because everything is impermanent, and everything is subject to its own causes and conditions. Every event only lasts a brief time. So if you want to have a constant world of pleasant events are all time-limited, aren't they? Pleasure is always time-limited. Sensual pleasure is always time-limited. Successes are always time-limited, right? So we are faced with the reality that we're constantly trying to find happiness, a sense of permanence, a sense of stability, a sense of well-being, a sense of peace in a world that is fundamentally unable to deliver that. Right? If you live for good food, the problem you have is what? Meals are time limited. They only last as long as the taste. Right? So you have to do a lot of eating to keep it going. every pleasure is time limited. Every pleasant event is time limited. Right? So the fundamental problem with this world, if we look for it as a source of happiness and peace of mind, is it cannot deliver. It is, because not only is it time limited, it is constantly changing because of causes and effects, and we can't control all the causes and effects. Can we? What? I mean, we can do everything we can to manipulate and control so we always end up in pleasant, pleasurable places and experiences. But again, that's still doesn't solve the fundamental problem. That no permanent sense of happiness and well-being, of peace of mind, can be found in a basic world that is constantly changing, 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 changing. And all moments are just made up of other moments and experiences which are primarily out of our ability to control. Is that true? Now, let's just take these. So, why do we suffer? Does anybody here ever suffer? Okay, some people are willing to admit they suffer. Why do you suffer? Anybody, which one? Just give me a suffering. And let's see if it relates to what we've just talked about.
Anxiety.
Yeah, so what do you're worried about what? You're worried that somehow something's going to happen in the future. Again, we know it's imagined, but there's also, that's scary to us, that some events may happen that we may not be able to control, right? Now, if you really believed that was actually a correct perception, yeah, you can't control the future, and you don't know what's going to happen. That's true. Nothing to be anxious about, something just to accept and live with. We can't control it. Can we? No. See, it's because we can't accept that, you know? We can't accept the fact that we live in a world that we can't control. And that many things can happen that'll be beyond our control, and they may be things that we don't want to happen to us. I mean, is there anybody here who wants unpleasant things to happen to themselves? No. Right? That would be crazy. But the truth is, they happen, don't they? That's the truth. They happen in little ways, and they happen in big ways. You know, what's the biggest one that happens to us? Death. Anybody here, you know, happy about that? That the whole thing's going to come to an end? You know, the whole thing's going to come to an end. One day we're just going to be gone. And we don't know when that's going to be. Is that true? Yeah, we can't control it. I mean, we can live healthily and take all our supplements, you know what I mean? But we're still going to die. We're still going to get sick, right? Isn't that true? We can't control it. Now, that can be frightening. But why is it frightening? Because we can't accept that these bodies of ours are impermanent, they're made up of parts, and these parts run down. As well as Nancy pointed out, there's all kinds of illnesses running around in this world. Right? Is that true? Yeah, we're just kind of constantly exchanging illness with each other. Even our loved ones give us their illness. Isn't that true? Again, if we have an expectation that that's not supposed to be the way it is, we'll suffer. Okay, so by accepting that we can't control anything, and understanding that and being at peace with that, we've rid ourselves of all worry and anxiety. Partially. Anybody else? Come on, let's. What other suffering do you have? Your disappointment. Why are you disappointed? You expect things to be a certain way, right? I mean, we're imposing our own misunderstanding on reality, right? Why do things unfold the way they do? causes and conditions. You know, why did he do that? Why did she not do that? Because of causes and conditions. It's really simple, right? If we accept that, we no longer live in a world of disappointment, of hurt. Right? Because we understand, yeah, that's just the way it is. Just the way it is not a is not moral or ethical. It's just a statement about reality. Our childhood was what it was, right? And if we think it was a good one or a bad one, or it should have been different, or shouldn't have been this way, or nobody deserves to have a child like that, no one deserves to have a parent like that, you know, you can think these things from now to the end of the time. And all you do will cause what? Suffering for yourself. Isn't that true? All right, so no more anxiety now, no more disappointment or hurt. Anybody else ever have an afflictive emotion?
Sad.
Sad. Why are we sad? Something's changed. Right? Something's changed. And part of us doesn't want that to have happened. Yeah. So we get sad. Something has changed. Something has gone away. Right? And we're sad. And yet the truth is, that's just the nature of life. Things change. Things arise and disappear. Things come into being, and they, you know, that's the natural of rhythm of things. Right? Okay. So we've eliminated sadness, disappointment, fear. What's left?
Anger.
Good one. Why are we angry? Because we don't understand cause and effect. We can't accept whatever has happened. Why has it happened? Because of cause and effect. We're angry because why? We think what? It should be different. Right? Life should be different. People should be different. That person should have been different. But what's the truth? The truth is they are who they are. That's the truth. That's the naked truth. They are who they are. Why are they the way they are? Because of their own causes and conditions. And we have to understand that if we had been born in that same family and all the causes and conditions that has happened to that person had happened to us, we'd be just like them, doing the same exact things. Isn't that true? Yeah, but we don't want to see that. We want to stand outside reality and create an alternative universe where everybody should be showing up in my life the way I want them to. Because we don't understand and accept, really understand and accept what's really going on in this world. Right? Is that true? I mean, it's hard. You see what I'm saying? That's what I mean, that, you know, we can read these teachings and blah, 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 yeah, yeah, yeah. But do we really, you know, 100% take them in? And if they are true, then we have to reconfigure the whole way we see life. Right? That's what he calls it, you know? Yet the pattern of our thoughts can be refined. A mistaken attitude can be changed. Now, why change it? I mean, why refine our thoughts? Why change our attitudes? Because they fundamentally cause us to misperceive situations in life, and because we misperceive situations in life, we have these things that in this world appear as normal, such as what? Anxiety, you know, it's like anxiety, depression, sadness, you know what I mean? Fear, anger, you know. We think this stuff is what? Normal. And we only think it's abnormal when it gets out of control. Isn't that true? And we think it's abnormal. You know, let me get back and get my, you know, those tolerable levels of anxiety, tolerable levels of sadness, depression, you know, tolerable areas of anger. Now life is good again. Well, is that true? Or is there another way to live where we are free of these things? And they're not like, you know, some alternative universe. You don't have to be a different person. You don't have to have a different life or live in a different geographical area. But we need to change what? The way we perceive life, which means how we think about life. So these teachings are there to help us really change the way we construct the world in our minds. Because the world is what it is. That loss has happened. The future cannot be known. Our expectations are not real. Things are what they are. People are who they are. The world is as it is. Why is the world the way it is today? Because of causes and conditions. Isn't that true? So, and I mean, is this making sense to you? So just by changing the way we view things, think about things, perceive things, we can have a radical lessening of our afflictive emotionality. And even better, we can devoting ourselves to really enhancing by seeing clearly how things are, we now have a chance of responding to situations with a wholesome way, understanding, intelligence, clear seeing, compassion, love, kindness, acceptance, you know. Now that all that becomes possible. So if you've been frustrated why that's been your goal, but somehow you've kind of always never kind of get there, it's because we don't have a mindset that facilitates that way of being in the world. Susan, you had your hand up? Okay. Yes. I do my best. But if you ask me, looking back over 50 years, I ascribe to this. I mean, this is true. I mean, this is the testament of practitioners for 2,600 years. Right? I mean, it's not, I mean, that's where we can relax, you see. I mean, Western psychology is how old? How old is Western psychology that kind of in a very conscious way there have been a certain amount of people looking at the, you know, the mind and suffering and what causes people to suffering? I mean, how old is it? 120 years old. I mean, this is 2,600 years old. And this has been a looking into the mind and the nature of mind and why we suffer and what creates happiness that has gone on, you know, in all these various historical time periods with all these different kinds of people and all these different kinds of countries and cultures and, you know, and all coming up with the same conclusions. Right? I mean, this is kind of significant. If one is looking for, you know, a reliable, time-tested way of showing up in the world in a clear-headed way. You know, it's like, oh, well, this is nice to have available to me. And the interesting thing about this, you see, in Western psychology, it's all theoretical, you see. We divorce the person from the process, right? So, you know, even though, you know, some of the founders of Western psychology, such as Sigmund Freud, were really not very healthy individuals, right? We accept their theories, and that goes throughout. But the difference about this is we expect that those who are teaching this stuff have realized it and can attest to it in their own personal life. Right? You see? That's very unique, right? So next time you go to your therapist, right, realize that all you have is what? There are degrees up on the wall. But have you ever thought of asking them, I mean, are you free of anxiety? Are you free of sadness? Are you totally free of anger? Are your mind just filled with wholesome emotions? That would be interesting. And their answer would probably be what? No, or, but I've learned to cope better. Yeah. I mean, if there are any mental health professionals in the room, is that true? I mean, when you go to professional, I'm looking at Sharon. I mean, you know, when you go to professional conferences, do people talk about their own personal transformation? Well, that's why you don't go to them. Well, I used to go to them too. And, you know, and it's not as if you don't hear many, many theoretical and practical things from people, right, that can be helpful. I'm not saying that. But, you know, people never talk about their own transformations. Now, why is that? Because that's not part of the mix, is it? But in Buddhism, traditionally, that's part of the mix. We expect that the transmission of 2,600 years is not simply a body of technique and theory. We expect that it has been transmitted by people who realize the truth of these teachings and manifest it in their life. That is the only reason, 2,600 years later, that Buddhism exists the way it exists, as a repository of this historical transmission of that transformation and awakening is possible, not theoretically, not by blind faith, but because generation after generation, people have put it to use and have seen, oh yes, do this, do this, do this, do this, and this happens. Because all human beings are the same, essentially. We're all the same. Whatever we are, you know, culturally, ethnically, gender, you know, it's all immaterial to this. We're all the same. We all have the same kind of minds. Right? That's the great unity of human experience. That's where we all come together. We all face the same issues. Whatever problems there are in the world are created by the afflictions in our own minds. You know, why do we have problems in families? Why do we have problems in relationships? Why? Because affliction's in the mind, right? A lack of wholesomeness in the mind. But you all know that, don't you? Some people had some questions? Oh. Uh-huh. What is the difference between grief and suffering? Again, we are human beings. In this life, we have relationships. We are, as you know, and when we have relationships, we have a kind of some degree of attachment to the person or persons that we are, in relationship with. So therefore, when something changes or something significant happens to them, we often naturally feel sad, right? That's kind of a natural thing. Sort of the same way when good things happen, we naturally feel what? Happy. We don't have to work at it. We feel happy. Right? When people we love or like come, we're happy. We smile. When they leave, we're a little what? Sad. Coming and going. Just the way it is. But it becomes suffering. See, that's normal. It's not a big deal. I feel sad. I mean, sadness is a feeling. Happiness is just a feeling. Even anger, it's just an immediate feeling. It's just a feeling. Fear, just as a feeling, arises. It's just a feeling. It's just arising in the mind. It's just part of kind of the human makeup. It's where we grab onto that and we start milking it. That's when it becomes suffering, right? You know, so when there is loss and sadness and we just allow that feeling to come up, we don't repress, we don't, you know, we're sad. Whether we're sad because, you know, a friend is leaving, they've been with us a few days and they're leaving, or somebody's died and, you know, it's the final leaving. There's sadness. You know, when people suffer, we're sad. We're not happy to hear they're suffering. But what we have is something, a bigger picture to put that in, you see. And now we're back to what? The view. Impermanence. Composite. You know what I mean? The nature of reality. So we understand that that which is happening is normal. Things come, things go. And even in the moment, if somebody's doing something, we feel anger. Oh, they're doing it because of their own causes and conditions. They really can't help themselves. We don't want to say that, you see. They do know better. They shouldn't do that. Right? Isn't that what we say? But what's the truth? They don't know better. If they knew better, they wouldn't do it. Right? You know, they don't know better. We don't know better. Right? How many people here do things when they know better? Right? But the thing we have to admit is, if I really knew better, I wouldn't have done it. So the truth is, I think I know better, but I really don't know better. Right? See, that's wonderful to acknowledge. Now we can really get at it. I don't know better. I think I know better. I think I understand impermanence and composite and the law of cause and effect and karma and the unsatisfactory. So, you know, I think I know all this stuff. But I really don't. Why? Because I still, you know, I still get angry. Not just a little irritation, not just a little anger, but I get angry and I ruminate. Can't believe this person did that or they shouldn't do that. And yet, what? They did do that. And they did it because of their own causes and conditions. Isn't that true? Of course it's true. And that tempers, you see, that tempers that capacity that we all have to endlessly ruminate, endlessly intensify our afflictive emotions. You know, that's what we do. We cultivate negativity. Why? Because we misperceive situations. Why do we misperceive? Because we really don't understand what's going on. Why don't we understand? Because we're not willing to accept the truth about reality. Yes?
I found it really helpful in my practice too, whenever I notice, I don't remember to do this, but frequently when I notice suffering arising in the mind, to ask myself, which one of these four am I not getting?
That's good practice.
I find it's always very simple when I ask the question, no, I'm not getting cause and effect or impermanence or whatever it is. So.
Yeah, so Angie's sharing that what she's found is by reflecting every time she finds that she's getting caught in some kind of afflictive mind state, just to ask herself, you know, what is it that I'm not practicing here, right? You know, am I not accepting impermanence? Am I not accepting cause and effect? Am I not accepting the fundamental unworkability of really trying to find happiness and peace of mind in this endlessly world of change? You know, what am I misperceiving here? And then hopefully the answer comes. And we can just correct. Now, I haven't said anything about notice the practice of Buddhism, the cultivation of wholesome mind states, the cultivation of mindfulness, the cultivation of concentration, the cultivation of insight into more deeply the nature of mind and reality. We haven't even gotten there yet, have we? But we've already remediated 90% of our suffering. 75% of our suffering. How about that? Does that make sense? So, whatever problems there are in the world are created by the afflictions in our mind. The mistaken attitude is the cause for the kleshas, for the afflictive emotions. Yet the pattern of our thoughts can be refined. How wonderful. Right? It would be terrible if the pattern of our thoughts couldn't be refined. But no, why can the pattern of our thoughts be refined? Because they too are just thoughts. They're just composite things, right? They are the way they are because of past causes and conditions. Oh, I can change. See, that's a wonderful thing about impermanence and cause and effect is like nothing solid. Everything's subject to change. What if I begin to make very consciously positive causes in my life? Oh, change. Well, that's easy. See how easy it is? Yeah, just change the way I view things, change the way I speak, change what I do with my body. Yeah, life becomes much better, much easier, much more wholesome. And in the practice of the deeper meditations, one finds that one can cultivate a constant source of well-being and happiness and equanimity and ease of mind that is not predicated on what's going on in the external world. There's freedom. If I can only be happy if a certain person is in the White House, and, you know, if that's the only, you know, if that's the cause of my happiness or suffering, what's going on out there? I'm in big trouble because I can't control that. Can I? No. I can't even control how people treat me, can I? No. But at the end of the day, I can control this to one degree or another. So there's the freedom. Good. Any final questions before we end? Oh, yes.
Must one wait for realization, for freedom to engage in an ethical, responsible way with the world?
Again, does one have to wait to respond to the what of the world? To the world with an ethical, responsible, until full realization? Must one wait for full realization and enlightenment to respond to the world? It's an interesting question. I think it's something to ponder, to ask myself, what is my real deep response to the world coming from? Is it really coming from love and understanding, or is it coming from anger and fear and despair? Is it coming from a desire to control outcome? You know, I think these are questions worth pondering, because what is an ethical and responsible response to the world? You know, these things are easy to say, but to really ask myself. Because we want to transform the world. The Buddha said 2,600 years ago, anger will never end by anger. Violence will never end by more violence. Violence will only end by nonviolence. Right? Anger will only end with love, understanding. Right? So it's really what our end game is, you know. You know, the world the world operates according to this endless struggle, right? But you know, there is a place of resolution. You know, look how far the world has gotten on one Buddha, right? Right? We say, oh, Shakyamuni Buddha is the founder of Buddhism, right? Look how far that one man got on his great enlightenment. Thich Nhat Hanh says, now is the time for 1,000 Buddhas, right? I mean, we're in deep stuff here, aren't we, in this world today? You know? The power of delusion, the power of the afflictive emotions, the power of ignorance is so magnified in our world, right? So we need 10,000 Buddhas, right? Don't we? Yeah. So to have the aspiration to want to really be one of those Buddhas, maybe not of the highest caliber, but at least kind of a low-level Buddha, if such a thing exists. You know, that's what the world needs. I mean, the world needs lots of things. And I think it's up to each of us to decide where in that we want to fit in. So in that sense, it's all good. But, Who's going to be the ones to really deal with the fundamental sufferings of so many people? Whatever their political suasion is, conservative, republic, you know, they're all suffering, aren't they? All the various movements suffer. The ones on this side and the ones on that side. The ones pro and the ones con. Isn't that true? Who's going to see that bigger picture? Before this announcement, I wanted to make one announcement. Next Sunday, we're going to be holding a ceremony of consecration. Some of you have been on the side. See, there's a big empty space where the cottage used to be. And there, I think many of you know, we are going to be building over the coming year this great cloud refuge. It's a place where people can be in residence, we can do retreats, and people can come here to train and different kinds of things. So next week we are holding a consecration ceremony. Before that consecration ceremony, we will have a guest teacher. He's one of the senior teachers of the Thich Nhat Hanh lineage here in America. His name is Phap Hai. I mean, that's his Vietnamese, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh is Vietnamese, so he gives his monks and nuns Vietnamese names. But Phap Hai, he's New Zealand or Australia, but anyhow, the Thich Nhat Hanh Foundation, which is sort of like the fundraising arm of the whole Thich Nhat Hanh community around the world, are having a board retreat here at our center. So they will be in residence here for 4 days. You may see them around, and then we've invited Phap Hai to give the Dharma talk. And then also to involve the monastics, both monks and nuns, to participate in our consecration ceremony. So you're all invited to that. And members, you have, will have received or will receive an email talking about kind of precious items that we want to put in this vessel that we will be burying under the building before they build it, and also collecting good wishes for good aspirations for the center and the refuge. So that'll be going on all week. Thank you.